So often in the Hare Krishna movement, probably a little too often, we say, you're in Maya, or I'm in Maya. Or that's Maya, right? So what is Maya? Now, I've given you the literal translation. The literal translation is that which is not, or illusion. But anyone have some idea what Maya is? Can anyone give me a definition of Maya? Material energy, okay. Yes. Oh, the devotees are so cool. We protect the holy places from our impurities. That's the definition of Maya. Actually, that's a fact.
Wow.
That's a fact. We could give that as a prime definition of Maya. It protects the spiritual world from people like us. Okay, yes.
Our teacher?
Our teacher. Whoa, what a devotee. It's a surrendered soul who sees Maya as teacher. Yes, Maya's a teacher. She's not a very nice teacher, though. She rides on a tiger and she carries a trident. She doesn't follow the child abuse protection guidelines. Yes. She is a pure devotee of Krishna. That's true. Yes.
She binds us to the material world.
She sure does. She binds us to the material world. So Krishna gives an explanation of what's Maya. But before we go to Krishna's explanation, how many of you here have studied at some point in your education the Iliad or the Odyssey? I don't teach anything at school anymore, huh? Actually, even Prabhupada would sometimes refer to different stories from the Odyssey. So, and the Iliad was about a great war that took place over a woman named Helen. She was kidnapped from her husband by Paris, and she was brought to Troy. And there was a huge war between Greece and Troy for the sake of Helen. So it went on for many years. I don't remember how years, 12 years or something, when the war went on. And finally, the Greeks were victorious, and they were sailing back to Greece, but they had a long trip. I think it took them another 12 years to get back to Greece or something. And the hero was Ulysses. So Ulysses was taking the ship back to Greece, and there's a number of interesting stories on the way, as I say, Srila Prabhupada quite a number of times makes reference to some of these stories. I think Prabhupada assumed that everyone in his audience was naturally familiar with them, but I think the classics have gone out of vogue in modern education. So at one point, they were told, they would stop many times on the way, and they were told that there was a problem coming up. They had many problems. But one of them they were told about was the Island of the Sirens. And it's from that that we get the English word siren. What do you say in French for siren? Siren. Siren. Probably destroyed the pronunciation. But so a siren, it gives us a what? What does a siren give us?
Warning.
A warning. All right, so on this island, there were witches. And these witches were cannibals. They liked to eat people. But who would voluntarily go to be eaten? Right? So they had to find some way of luring people there to be eaten. So they would sing. And their song was a siren. They were called sirens, and their song was the siren's song. And their song would serve, could serve as a warning, but it also had magical powers. So if you listen to their song, instead of seeing the island as a desert with a bunch of bones and some witches gnawing on the bones, you saw a beautiful paradise. Beautiful gardens, like here there's a nice rose garden, where Bhaktivedanta Manor, there's so many beautiful gardens and fountains. So it would look like that. Gardens, fountains, beautiful birds, right? Attractive animals, and the witches looked like beautiful, beautiful women. So when sailors would go by the island and they would hear the siren song, it would draw them like a magnet to this island, and they'd think, oh, there is Swargaloka. There is a heavenly planet. And when they'd get there, the witches would pounce on them and kill them and devour them. So Ulysses was warned about this island, and he was told that if you don't listen to the song of the sirens, then you won't be bewitched. So he instructed all of his men to get very good earplugs. Total. You know, I don't know if they had the noise protectors that they use now at the airports, but you know, something like that. Something. They fashioned these earplugs, put like wax in their ears. But Ulysses was curious. He said, I want to know what kind of magical song that is that can make a person think that a desert with witches is a paradise. So he said, but I don't trust myself. What will happen when I hear the song? So he told his men, tie me to the mast of the ship. And any orders that I give when we go by the island, you ignore those orders. So Ulysses didn't plug his ears, but he was tied up to the ship. So as the ship approaches, the men who were rowing with their wax in their ears, when they saw the island with piles and piles of human bones and this desert and these hideous witches with long fangs, they looked at it and they were rowing faster and faster and faster. And Ulysses, who didn't have his ears plugged, but was just tied to the mast, he screamed and got onto the mast. He said, go there, go over there to the island. So that is Maya. So this is how Krishna defines Maya, and this definition of Maya is given in the four nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam. So nutshell means like a little walnut shell, what you can fit inside of a walnut shell. So this is the essential verses. These are the original Bhagavatam that Krishna spoke to Brahma, and this is how he defines Maya. Why don't we read this together? Whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in the darkness. All right, so let's say that in front of us, you have what looks like, we were talking yesterday about material happiness and spiritual happiness, right? So does material happiness look like happiness?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course it does. Just like that on the Siren's Island looked like a paradise. So we have in front of us something that looks like happiness, right? But when we go for it, we just end up running into a brick wall, so to speak. We run into a wall. And what Krishna consciousness is you turn around, instead of going for the happiness, you renounce that material happiness. You do what looks materially as austerity, and you turn around and you find that the real happiness is behind you. It's behind you because Bahir Mukhe, we were looking at Krishna and we turned our face. So if the real happiness is behind us but appears to be in front of us, then what's in front of us must be a
reflection.
It's a reflection. And it appears to be in darkness. Just like we have artificially darkened this room, otherwise the sun would be streaming in the windows. So Maya is, we're artificially darkening our consciousness, and so all we see is a reflection. Now Prabhupada further explains this in the purport. He says that thinking that something is another, if you think a rope is a snake, he gives that example. So he says, the rope exists in front of us, but it's not false, but thinking it's a snake is false. So the mirror is not false, but thinking that what I see in the mirror is reality, that is false. The mirror is not false. And the reflection is not false. But the reflection is not the reality. So here we've given one example of a reflection. Can anyone think of some other examples or analogies for Maya besides a reflection? Yeah.
A mirage.
A mirage in the desert. So it looks like water, but when you go, it's not water. Somebody else. Another analogy, another idea by which we can understand Maya. No? I'll give you some. So one is dreams. So we're dreaming, just like yesterday, this one devotee here, Varshana, was playing a CD of Sitaram Maharaj singing. She was playing it very loudly in her room, which is right next to my room. So I went and I turned it, she wasn't there, and she was playing it for her deity. So I turned it down a little bit. I thought, I need to take like a little 15, 20 minute rest before prasadam. So I lay down, and I was dreaming about Sitaram Maharaj. And I had never dreamt before about Sitaram Maharaj. But when I woke up, I thought, why was I dreaming about Shiva? Oh my gosh. I was dreaming he was giving a class. I thought, oh, because it's playing on the tape, right? So So, but when you're in a dream, you think it's reality. And while you're in the middle of the dream, just like we were talking yesterday, what were we saying yesterday about dreams? What do we do sometimes in dreams? So sometimes in a dream you're drinking water and you taste the water in your dream. Or sometimes what else do you do in a dream that seems real? Sometimes you eat in a dream, you go places in a dream. And when you're dreaming, it seems very real. It's only in comparison when you wake up. Oh, that must not be real and this must be real. Are dreams real? Do they happen?
Yes.
On some level, yeah. What are they, actually? What's going on?
Mental activity.
There's some mental activity. You could look in the brain, would you find electrical impulses in the brain? So is something happening? Something's happening. But is what's happening what seems to be happening?
No.
No. Okay, well let's look at another one now. We have movies and books. So, movies and books, what is a movie actually?
Film.
It's film, but when you're looking at the screen, what is it?
Reflection.
Projector. Well, there is a reflection going on the projector. There's mirrors. It's a picture. What does it even get? Get even more basic. What is it?
Light.
It's light. Just light. Bonus. Red, yellow, and green light flickering on the screen. Right? Or you could say, well, if somebody filmed actors and it's actors and actresses pretending to be something somewhere, but it's just light. So, is it something? Is it what it seems to be? It seems to be, you know, people shooting each other, and, right, getting treasure, and climbing mountains and jumping off helicopters and all these things. It seems that it's just light. But what happens when, that's like when we're in a dream, do we get emotionally involved in the dream? Mm-hmm. If you're watching a movie, can you get emotionally involved in the movie? Mm-hmm. You can practically forget that you're sitting in the theater, right? Same with the book. What is the book? What is it?
Ink.
Ink and paper. Right? But when one is reading a book, does one start thinking, oh yes, I'm in Africa, right? And you can forget. You forget what time it is. You forget everything. Right? And I give the example of computer games. Have you ever seen anybody, if you've done it yourself, you don't have to admit it, but have you ever seen anybody go without like food or water or sleep playing computer games? Oh, okay. That's what I thought. No? But what is it really? What is a computer game really? What's the code made up of?
Numbers.
What numbers? Ones and zeros. Can you imagine staring at a screen of ones and zeros for 15 hours without eating or sleeping? That's pretty crazy, isn't it? That's what it is. It's ones and zeros. But we're thinking, you know, I've got my weapons, and I've got my spells, and my potions, and I'm killing the enemy, and I'm jumping over rivers, and whatever people do. I'm shooting somebody, you know. I'm talking to my friends. Can you forget yourself? It's better computer games more, I think, than some of the others. Can you forget who you are? Yeah. I've seen people, thank you, Krishna, I've never played computer games, but I've seen people playing computer games, and they take that identity into their real life. Amazing. They're talking to each other by their names in the game. You ever seen anybody do that? It's amazing. They forget, they actually think, you know, I'm that robotic prince and, you know, my name is whatever the name is. Okay. Anybody can think of any other analogies for Maya? Yes.
Shadows. Coming up here.
Shadows. Yes, so sometimes that analogy is given in the scripture. You know, you see a shadow. Where I lived in America, on the way to Mangalarti, there were certain shadows that looked like people. Huh. And even though I knew that, you know, whenever I see them, I don't know. Oh, yeah, it's just a shadow. Anything else? Yes?
A camel eating thorns.
Camel eating thorns, and the thorns are tearing up its mouth, but it's thinking, yes, I'm very, very happy. So there's, of course, another example given of Maya in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna gives the example of an upside-down tree. So at the manor, we have a very nice pond, right? And in the pond, you see the trees are reflected in the water. And because the water's moving, the tree is also distorted by the water. Now, I don't think we have any fruit trees around the pond. But just let's say that there was a nice fruit tree around the pond. And you look into the water and you think, oh, there's an apple, you know. So if you reach into the water for the apple, you get simply wet. Weeds and wet and algae and maybe one of the geese will bite you. So, and this water is the water of desire. The reason that this tree appears in the water is that we have a desire to be in illusion. Just like, why does someone buy a computer game? Because they want to be in illusion. Why does someone go to a movie? Why does someone read an ordinary book? They're thinking, this material so-called happiness, you remember all those things about material happiness yesterday? At least one or two of them? How it's temporary, how you have to suffer in order to enjoy it, how the enjoyment doesn't last. Remember all those things we were talking about? So we get tired of that and we think, well, let me go into an illusion of an illusion, and therefore we do these things. But also this illusion of the material world was because we wanted it. Here's another nice picture of the upside down tree. That in the real tree, there's Krishna with the gopis, and in the upside down tree, you see, there's a man and a woman, they're very much in love, and then later on they're not very much in love. And there you see Mother Yasoda with baby Krishna, and it's just bliss, and then at the bottom you see there's the father with the baby in the middle of the night, and they're not in very much bliss. Right? And then you see at the top there's someone just looking at Krishna in reverence. At the bottom there's a girl looking at a rock star. Right? And thinking, yes, I just love that rock star. Of course, the rock star doesn't give her any real satisfaction. And then at the top, you see, there's a woman, she's bringing Krishna something to eat, just serving Krishna. And at the bottom, you see the reflection, the waiter in the restaurant. But of course, the waiter is not feeling great satisfaction by serving the customer. And then you see Krishna with his friends, right? His cowherd boyfriends. And at the bottom, you see some friends, the bottom left, but they're just simply fighting. So this is also a reflection. This is the illusion. In the spiritual world, there's five main relationships we have with Krishna. On reverence, serving, friendship, parental, and conjugal. And these get reflected in this world. So in this world, we have on reverence for people. We may serve them. We be friends with them. We are their parents. Or we have a romantic relationship with them. But in this world, those things are a source of suffering, because they're on the platform of so-called material happiness. All right, now we want to know how to recognize Maya in our lives. Why do we want to recognize Maya in our lives? So we can run away from her. Do you want to go to the island or do you want to row past it? Okay, well, and the only way to row past it is you've got to be able to what? You've got to see it for what it is. And Srila Prabhupada says that we want to see the naked form of Maya. Does that sound funny? You know what the naked form of Maya is? It's a pile of bones. It's a pile of bones and a bunch of witches. That's what the naked form of Maya is. And we want to see that. We don't want to see a paradise. And then you go for the paradise, you know, and you just get eaten alive. So if we are in Maya, if we're in illusion, how do we feel? How do we think? And how do we behave? So if you're any of you have notes, I'm going to be organizing this into these three areas of thinking, feeling, and willing. Thinking, feeling, and willing. How do we feel? How do we think? What do we do? How do we feel? How do we think? What do we do? Okay? Those things work together, feelings, thoughts, and behavior. That's really all there is. There's feelings, thoughts, and behavior. So we're going to look at Maya in our feelings, our thoughts, and our behavior. So let's first think about feelings. If somebody's an illusion, what sort of things do they feel? What kind of emotions does a person have when they're in illusion? Yes.
Independent and that nothing can harm them.
Oh, a feeling of invulnerability. Okay. All right, let's look at, I'll ask you for some more. When we're in Maya, we can look at this nice picture here. This is from the Bhagavad Gita, Trividam Narikasyedam, Dvaranasanam Atmana, Kama Krodha Sukha Lobha. What? Tasmat Ekam Svayam Pujet. And this is that when we're in Maya, we feel lust, anger, and greed. We feel an intense desire to get things. We feel angry when they don't work out the way we want. And we feel that we want more and more because we're never satisfied. And these things lag, lust, anger, greed, lag our consciousness and our spiritual life. Right? You ever have lags on the computer? Yeah, that's fun. So that's what lust, anger, and greed do. They lag our spiritual life. What are the three things?
Lust, anger, greed.
What are they? The ladies too, please. The ladies are all sleeping, everybody.
Lust, anger, and greed.
Thank you. What do they do?
Lag us.
Thank you. Therefore, Krishna says if you're sane, you'll give them up. When you see the sirens, what do they feel? Lust and greediness. Right? When we're talking about material happiness, when we go for material happiness, we're feeling greedy for it, we're feeling lusty for it. But then, when it doesn't work out, then you feel angry. Basically, we can assume, this is a little hint for all of you, if you're angry, you're probably in Maya. There is spiritual anger, but generally, if we're angry, we're in illusion. Even if we're annoyed, the smaller levels of anger. As soon as you feel annoyed, angry, irritated, your motives are probably wrong. Just remember that. As soon as you feel even like, annoying, irritating, or you're angry, stop. My motives are wrong. I'm seeing a paradise and I'm frustrated that it's not a paradise. I'm going for the apple in the water and I'm frustrated that I'm getting wet. So many times we think, you know, if I'm angry or frustrated, it's because someone's hampering my service to Krishna. It's not usually the same. Okay, what else do we feel? And here's a nice picture. You see the little boy and the girl. They're getting their presents. They're saying, oh boy, it's just what I wanted. And then as they're opening it, she says, I'm bored. His present looks good. I'm tired of this stuff. Wish I had that stuff. Right? And then they're fighting. So this is hankering for what we don't have. Remember those guys yesterday, the friends, where did they go? They went shopping. Remember they went shopping? So first they were hankering for what they didn't have. They had a whole, remember, how was they, a small list or big list?
Big.
A really big list. They were hankering for what they didn't have. That's what they went. And were they able to get most things?
No.
No. Why? One of two things happened. They were either out or too expensive, right? So then we feel frustration and anger when we don't get something, right? They were really fried that all these things I had on my list, I couldn't get. And then remember they brought a bunch of stuff home? Remember that? What happened with some of the stuff they brought home? It broke or it didn't work right. Or the instructions were, remember they had these long instructions that were written by people in China and they couldn't figure it out?
Yes.
So the things disappoint us. We get them and we're disappointed. Or we lose it. Right? Or it gets old, falls apart. So this is the way we feel. When we're in illusion, we're going to feel one of these things. We're going to feel, I want something I don't have, or we're going to be frustrated. And then we have a few things left, a few things that we're using, but we know all of those things are what? Temporary. Therefore, we're feeling fear. So these are our emotions and material, and they're there constantly. We're hankering for what we don't have. We're frustrated at what we couldn't get. We're frustrated at what didn't work right. We're frustrated at what we lost. And we're afraid that the few things we have, we're going to lose. Is there anything we have in the material world that we're not going to lose? Anything. No. All right. Now, how do we think when we're in Maya? That's how we feel. Remember we're talking, what are the three things? Thinking, feeling, willing. Everyone? Thinking, feeling, willing. I was talking about feeling. Now, what kind of thoughts do we have? This is what we connect when we're feeling these things. There should be a little siren that goes off that says, oh, I'm in Maya. Okay? That's what it's teaching you, this stuff. When you're feeling lust, anger, greed, when you're feeling hankering, frustration, fear, oh, that means I'm in illusion. I think the ones and zeros are a game. I think the lights are an adventure. I think the water is fruit. Okay? Right? And then if you go for the illusion, what are you going to feel? Unhappy. Right? Okay? Anybody who wants to feel unhappy? Any takers? And how are we going to think when we're in Maya? Let's read this together. So much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my scheme. So much is mine now, and will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices, I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. Oh, Lakshman, I'm sorry. He didn't like the demon verses. He said, I thought I was with devotees. Why are they all talking like demons? So this is the way we're thinking. Of course, we probably don't think of killing our enemies, but we do try to neutralize our enemies. I mean, we definitely do. We think, I have a lot of things. I have a lot of things I want. I have that little gizmo with the sunglasses that have the, you know, the earphones and in the sunglasses. I look really cool with my iPod in one pocket and my cell phone in the other. Some of you are probably going to run out and buy this after these classes I'm giving. I have this really cool stuff, you know. The guys are thinking I have a really cool car and a really cool computer. The girls are thinking I have such pretty jewelry and such nice things. And, you know, so we're thinking I have some nice things. And in the future, I'm going to get more. And, you know, there are people who really bug me, but I'm going to deal with them. I know how to deal with the people who are impediments. And as in Krishna consciousness, sometimes we think like that, well, these people are impediments to my service. That's the same mentality. You know, and then I'm going to make those people who praise me and who are nice to me and who help me enjoy, then I'm going to cultivate my friendship with them. And I have it together. I'm a really together person. I mean, yeah, I have some problems, but, you know, they're small ones and I'm getting better. You know, nobody's perfect. Yeah, but except for me. But I really got it together. You know, if people don't like something about me, hey, that's their problem. Yeah, they're just envious of me because I have it so together. And, well, you know, I may not be the richest person, but I've got good stuff and I've got a really nice family. My family are from such and such place, and we have a long heritage. We are very proud people. And I'll do some religious activities to secure my... Yes, I'll do some religious activities just to secure my position in this world. So when we're in Maya, we also think that whatever happens to my body and mind is happiness. If something nice happens to my body, I'm happy. If something nice happens to my mind, then I'm happy. And the way I'm happiness, I get happiness is I try to adjust the material energy. So like if it's hot, I fan myself. Oh, now I'm happy. If I'm around somebody I don't like, I get away from them. I go to people that I like. I change the external things. And I'm thinking, I need things to go the way I want. I need people to treat me the way I want in order to be happy. I think my needs are to make a perfect situation in the mirror. That's where I think my happiness is. So I haven't had anything to drink or eat. I haven't used the bathroom for 15 hours because I'm glued to the computer. And I'm thinking, if I get things in this world, in the computer, then I will be happy. If I get that spell, if I get that weapon, if I get that this, if I go to this part of the fantasy world, then I will be happy. That's what we think when we're in illusion. Why do we want to master something that's not real? We think it's true. Well, just think of it. What is the value of being the master of something that's not real? You see, you have that illusion. But it's an illusion. You know, if some intoxicated person is walking down the street thinking that they're the master of the street and they're singing very loudly, and it just, to someone who's not intoxicated, how does it appear? How does it appear? Mad. Mad. If you go by someone playing a computer game, and you're not playing the game, and you're not involved in the game, and you see that they're so anxious to master the game and control the game, what does that appear like to you? Crazy. It'd be madness. You know, you say, come eat, and they say, no. I have to get this treasure over here. So this mentality, please, if you understand one thing, try to understand what's on the screen right now. That as soon as we are thinking that my external circumstances are the cause of my happiness, then we are in illusion. And I hear this all the time, even from devotees. If my husband would just treat me the way I wanted, then I would be happy. If I could just have money, then I would be happy. If I could just be healthy, then I would be happy. If I just had a good job, then I would... It's for Krishna! Shouldn't I have a nice, wonderful relationship with the opposite sex, even though I'm 75? Uh-huh. Then I would be happy, and it would be good for my service. Wouldn't it? Right? How am I going to serve Krishna unless I have that? How am I going to serve Krishna unless I'm healthy? How am I going to serve Krishna unless I have a lot of money? How am I going to serve Krishna unless... But what are we doing then? We're thinking that it's something in the dream that will make us happy. Did anyone ever become happy by getting money in a dream?
No.
No, never. All right. Now... We had thinking, feeling, what was the other one?
Willing.
So, when we're in Maya, how do we behave?
Way bad.
Yeah, way bad. Okay, I like that. Alright, so here's the guy. Remember the friends were going shopping, right? So here he's shopping. And here's the poor chop in Maya. He's going shopping and he wants to touch all the clothes and he wants to eat all the food and listen to all the music and look at all the pictures and smell all the nice things. So when we're in Maya, the way we behave is we use our, because we're thinking. How are we thinking again? What do we think when we're in Maya? Happiness based on the body. We think what will make us happy when we're in illusion? What things?
External.
Can everybody see?
External.
All right. So if I think external things will make me happy, then I have to get them. Right? So then I'm going to use my senses to try to get external things. Right? So is this a very happy state of affairs? No. Okay, who would like to know how to get out of illusion? Alright, coming up. Alright. One reason we want to get out of illusion is that it's not very pleasant to have witches eating your body. It really isn't. It's not a pleasant sensation. And Krishna explains that Maya burns. It's like a fire. So in a lot of kitchens, we keep something in the kitchen in case we get burned. Anybody know what do we keep in a kitchen in case we get burned? No, on our body. A fire extinguisher on our body. That's some ego. Very good, okay. What do a lot of people have in their kitchen to use for burns? Now, after you get burned, what do people put on the burns? But what kind of cream? Would anyone know what's some of a really good cream to use? What kind of cream is yours? I'm thinking of a brand name. What kind of, I don't know, the new cane brand name. What sort of material do we put on a burn? And nobody cooks around here. We've got to get you all in the kitchen. You know, you ever use like aloe vera from a cactus plant? They ever use that? Nobody uses aloe? Yeah. Has anyone heard of aloe vera?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's a kind of cactus, at least you've heard of it. It's a kind of cactus, and you can open up, some people actually keep the cactus plant in their kitchen, and they open it up and they just stick the piece of open up cactus on the burn. Or you can take out the stuff that's kind of slimy and jelly-like, and you put it on the burn and it cools it. All right, so those who are writing, I want you to write from top to bottom the word aloe, A-L-O-E. All right. So now we're going to get our aloe vera to soothe our burn. All right, and the A is going to stand for ability, the L for luck or fortune, the O for other people, and the E for effort. You will get a test on this. You will, actually. Not from me, but you will. several, and there is a final exam. Yes, there is. No joking. All right. So, ability to conquer Maya. The ability to conquer Maya. Krishna explains this in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. That in order to conquer Maya, you have to be free from sin. So just like if you want the ability to run a race, you have to have strength and endurance, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So the ability to conquer Maya, the strength and endurance comes from freedom from sin. And we're going to look at no meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling. So if we're doing any of those things, we will not have the ability to conquer Maya. We will not have the strength. Doing those things, it's like trying to run a race where if you never exercise. No, won't work. I mean, not only did Ulysses' men have to have their ears plugged with wax, they also had to do what? They had to row the boat. Okay? They also had to have some strength. Okay, the next one after the A for aloe, the L stood for what?
Luck
or good fortune. So the good fortune that we need is we need the mercy of Krishna. So let's see what Krishna says, how we conquer Maya. He says, let's say this together, this divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is difficult to overcome, but those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. So although we desire to be in this illusion, we can only be in illusion by Krishna putting us in illusion, and we can only get out of illusion by Krishna removing the illusion. Just like a person goes to prison because they commit a crime, but still the government locks them up. They don't lock themselves up. And even if a person reforms himself in prison, the government still has to let them out. All right, so no matter how much we want to be out of Maya, ultimately we also need that good luck, that good fortune, that Krishna lets us out. We cannot get out of Maya entirely on our own effort. All right, then we had, so the A stood for?
Ability,
which meant freedom from?
Sin.
And L is for?
Love.
Or fortune, which is? Krishna's mercy. All right, now the O is for other people's help. And who are the main other people we need to help us? The devotees. That's right. So we need the mercy of the pure devotees. And we can get the mercy of the pure devotees by following their instruction. Just like, how was Ulysses able to go past the island of the sirens?
Someone told him.
Somebody warned him. If nobody had warned him, would he have been able to do it?
Mm-hmm.
And he was given very specific instructions. What instructions was he given?
Plug out your ears.
Plug your ears. Right? They're going to get you through your ears, he was told. So that's the sense you have to worry about. So we have to get instructions from somebody. And then also we need to please the devotees. You can't just go up, drive up to someone on the street and say, hey buddy, you better give me instructions, I'm lost. You gotta make him happy. He said, excuse me, sir. I was in a car the other day. Somehow everybody's been getting me lost in the UK. I don't know. When I must be jinxing every car I get into. But oh, we were lost the other day, and a devotee pulls up and says to the person on the street, excuse me, do you know your way around here? I thought that was kind of interesting. In Sherwood. You know, usually we say, excuse me, sir, excuse me, ma'am, would you please help me? So one way that we please the guru, we please the pure devotee, is we help them in their service to Krishna. That's what makes them very, very happy. Then also we follow their example. Rupa Goswami explains this in the Nectar of Instruction. But that doesn't mean we imitate them. They're giving us instruction and they're setting an example because they're Adumaya. If you want to know what's the right path to take, then you follow somebody who knows the path. You walk behind them. Right? And we also hear about them. We hear from them about what is Krishna and what is Maya. This is actually quite important because sometimes devotees just say, well, I just want to hear about Krishna. Oh, how is Krishna playing his flute? How is Krishna dancing? You're so devoted that even after being up all night, you're still here. I can't believe it. When I see that you're still here and struggling to stay awake after chanting all night, then I feel very, you're giving me great enthusiasm to speak. I feel if someone has that much enthusiasm to hear, then how can I not be enthusiastic to speak?
Sure.
So thank you very much. And you know, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, and I know it's a struggle, you're really struggling. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati said to Prabhupada, he said, you have heard nicely. And therefore he benedicted them. So that's what we're talking about here, to hear about Krishna. But not only to hear about Krishna, we also have to hear about Maya. Some people say, oh, I don't want to hear about Maya. Like now at the manor, we're reading this section of the fifth canto, which is all just about Maya. Heavy stuff. It's not nice stuff to read. The witches are like this, and the island is like this, and the bones look like this, and, you know, there's quicksand on the island on the left side. I mean, it's this very detailed description of what is Maya. But we have to know that also. We have to be able to recognize Maya. Alright, so we're going down L-O. A was what? Ability, which is freedom from sin. L is
love,
or fortune, which is mercy. Okay, O is other people, which is especially the devotees or the Vaishnavas. Now we're going to go to E.
Effort.
So we're going to go to thinking, feeling, and willing again. Alright, remember we have thinking, feeling, and willing when we're in Maya. So now we're going to look at the thinking, feeling, and willing to overcome Maya. Right? What do we feel when we're in Maya again? Lust, anger, and greed. And what do? Lag in our spiritual life. Alright, so what should we feel if we want to conquer Maya? We want to feel the presence of Krishna everywhere. And we can do that, the light of the sun and the moon, that's Krishna, like now the sunlight coming in. That's Krishna. How water tastes, right? That's also Krishna. Our abilities, our intelligence, our memory, that's also Krishna. The taste of the food, that's also Krishna. So we should be feeling the presence of Krishna everywhere. Actually, Krishna's next to us all the time. We don't see him because of illusion. So a way to get out of illusion is to feel, yes, here's Krishna, here's Krishna, here's Krishna, here's Krishna. Now remember, how do we think when we're in Maya? That's how we felt. We feel lust, anger, greed. We feel hankering and lamentation. That's how we feel. How do we think when we're in Maya? I'm the controller, yeah? What else? I'm enjoyer, yeah? Somebody back there? I'm the most powerful. How else do we think when we're in Maya? I'm going to neutralize my enemies. I'm going to get rid of my enemies. Okay, how do we think when we're conquering Maya? I am Krishna's servant. Instead of I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, I'm Krishna's servant. And I'm not this body and mind. I'm not going to get happiness by pleasing the body and mind because it's not me. Right? Did you also stay up on that?
Almost.
Thank you also for being here. So if I'm not the body or mind, it doesn't matter how much happiness I give to the body and mind. Could you imagine you look in the mirror in the morning, okay, and instead of putting tilak on your own forehead, you put tilak on the forehead in the mirror.
I
He brushed his teeth in the mirror. So, but the way to conquer Maya is we say, that's not me. That Krishna is controlling everything. Can I control this material energy to become happy? Is it possible? No. So some of you were talking to me the other day and saying, well, you know, if people have cheated us, we have to become hard-hearted so we can protect ourselves and then nobody else will cheat us. And I said, does it work? I don't think so. Krishna's control. I can't. What can I control? What can I control? My own desires, that's all. My desires, my thoughts, to some extent my behavior. But I mean, what can I control? Not very much. Okay, so my happiness is internal. My happiness does not come from how much money I have, from how healthy I am, from how much people like me or don't like me, from what job I'm doing. My happiness comes from how much I'm connected with Krishna. And I'm not the doer. I can't, I'm not really doing things. Whatever I do is really by Krishna's will. And then I'm thinking, how can I help spread Krishna consciousness? We'll get into this a little bit more tomorrow with how to control the mind. But one should be thinking, what can I, because remember, other people, it's helping with the devotee's mission, right? So our thought should be, how can I help with the mission? What can I do? I mean, a lot of what's going on here in Pandavasena is people thinking, what can I do? How can I help people come to Krishna? I see a lot of that. A lot of really creative, innovative thought. And one should also be thinking about how beautiful and how wonderful Krishna is. One should be thinking. It's like we've seen these beautiful deities, Radha, Govinda Madhava, and Krishna Balaram. We should be thinking about them during the day. You're thinking, oh, so yesterday, anybody remember what season the deities, what seasonal forest they were in yesterday? Autumn. What seasonal forest were they walking through the day? Winter. Kind of odd to do that in July, but anyway. You know, in Vrindavan, there are six seasonal forests. And they all exist at the same time. One of them has all the seasons at one time. And the other each different season. And Krishna walks through each of these seasonal forests every day. So he walks through the autumnal forest and the winter. Of course, the winter forest isn't severe winter. But they each have like different kinds of flowers and fruit and slightly different atmosphere. Right? So we can think, I mean, this is, I've never seen an outfit like this before. I was really amazed. Yesterday I was thinking the same thing. I thought, I've never seen an outfit with falling leaves, falling autumn leaves, and now this outfit is snowflakes. So one can certainly meditate and think about how beautiful Krishna is. And of course, that's one of Krishna's main pieces of advice for how to get free of Maya. Man mana bhava mad bhakto, one should always think of me. He says that two times in the Bhagavad Gita. And one of the main reasons that we worship the deity is so we can always think about Krishna. Okay, so far we've talked about how we feel to conquer Maya, how we think to conquer Maya. Now we're going to talk about how we
will.
Right, our behavior to conquer Maya. So effort to conquer Maya. So here's the same person going shopping, but this time they're going shopping for Krishna. Yes, and you see the nose is smelling flowers offered to Krishna, the eyes are looking at the beautiful deities, the ears are hearing the chanting, the big tongue there, tasting prasadam, the hands are polishing the deity's things, right? So our behavior is we're going to engage the senses. Bhakti yoga is so nice. So nice. Impersonalistic yoga is you try to just stop the senses. You try to just tie them up, you know. Just close your eye and close your, you know. But in bhakti yoga, we're engaging the senses in Krishna's service. And of all of the senses, especially once you chant the holy name of Krishna. That especially, the prime behavior for conquering Maya is to chant the holy name of Krishna. All right. Now we're going to have just a little exam. All right. So we want to look at all these things. I'd like you to suggest, someone to suggest a practical situation, and we're going to figure out how to apply aloe vera to the burning of Maya. Some practical situation.
You really
want to
watch your favorite TV program.
You really want to watch your favorite TV program. Okay, that's a good example. All right, how can we, so we're looking first at A stands for what? Ability, which is freedom from sin. So what's the problem with most TV programs?
Well,
full of sex and violence.
Yeah. Alcohol. It's full of breaking of the regular principles, isn't it? So one can think, well, I'm not doing it. I'm just enjoying watching other people do it. I'm just virtually inviting other people into my living room to do it on my couch, you know. So that's the first thing we can say, is that I really don't know if I want, you know, people sitting on my couch eating meat and drinking alcohol and engaging in their sexual activities and shooting each other by getting holes in my furniture. So that's the first thing that we can think. And then that's A for aloe. Then L is what? Luck or fortune. So that refers to what?
Krishna's
mercy. So if I'm thinking I want to wash my bed, it's a strong desire because I've watched the show for the last 5 years and I'm really involved in the plot and I really think about the characters. I feel like they're my best friends. They're nicer to me than my real friends. And, you know, I just feel safe and secure when I'm watching them. So how am I going to get Krishna's mercy? I can chant. Thank you. Very good. I can chant. You know, the thought will come to the mind. And I can chant. What else can I do? I can pray to Krishna. Yeah? I can call him. Well, that will get to the oh, yeah. I can surrender. Because Krishna says, it's very difficult, he says. This is my divine energy. But if you surrender me, say, Krishna, I really have this strong desire and I don't know what to do. There's a nice name of Krishna. It's called Madan Mohan. Madan means Cupid. And it refers specifically to sex desire, but any material desire. And Mohan, he's attracting that desire. He's stronger than that desire. So we say, Krishna, I'm feeling very attracted to this thing that I know is going to have me be devoured by these witches. So you please attract me to you instead. And he can do that. I've personally experienced a praying like this. Krishna can take away a very deep, burning, long-seated desire like that. You have to also want to get rid of it. I mean, it doesn't really help if you, like, say, Krishna, help me get free of this. You know, you have to let go. Bhakti Sanatha says that. He said, if you're hugging the tree, and you say, get me away from the tree. And so we'll get to that on effort. So then the next one, O stands for what? Other people. So that means the other people is what? Whatever it is. Oh, yeah, other people. So how are we going to get help from other people? We call a devotee? To do that takes some what? Guts. Takes some courage. It takes some humility. You know? A lot of the times the reason that we stay in illusion and suffer is that we don't have the guts to ask for help. We want to pretend I'm perfect, powerful, happy, have it all together, you know. We may not say I'm perfect, powerful, happy, enjoying the material world, but I'm perfect, powerful, happy, and as a, you know, saintly person. We don't want to admit our failings to anyone. Just admitting our problems to somebody else can be a tremendous help. Sometimes just doing that is enough. Going to another devotee and saying, I'm really struggling with wanting to watch this TV show. What do I do? Can you help me? What else can we do as far as other devotees? We talked about with other devotees we can do what? Watch a Krishna conscious show. Okay, that's good. That comes under effort. But what else can we do with other devotees? We were saying that one way we get the mercy of other devotees is by doing, pleasing them by serving them in their mission. I feel like I'm in the middle of a computer game right now. Serving them in their mission. So we can think, all right, what could I do instead of watching the show? What could I do instead? Is there anything you can do about that? Is it like part of the thing back there? Thank you. It's walking and talking. So, I can't think. What can I do instead? This is a little key here, and I usually spend about an hour and a half, 2 hours teaching this thing. I mean, this little idea. You ask yourself, What can I do instead? Can everyone say this?
What can I do instead?
If you just try to stop something, it's not very effective. Just like if I say to you, okay, you can think about anything you want except for elephants. Not very effective, is it? So, what happens if all you're thinking is, I'm not going to watch that show, I'm not going to watch that show. Not going to watch that show. I'm not going to watch that show. I'm not going to watch that. You know that show with this type and this. I'm not going to watch that show. And this is what happened last week. And I'm not going to watch that show. So we'll get into this a little bit more tomorrow, that whatever we think about, we end up wanting. So if we're always thinking about what I don't want, and we see this happen with renounced people. I don't want to get married. 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 Married. I don't want to get married. I see this happen even with, you know, sannyasis, because all their classes were about women. It's interesting. You know, pretty soon they got one for themselves. So whatever, you know, whatever we're thinking about, that's what we'll go to. So if you're just thinking, I don't want to watch the show, so think of what can I do instead? How can I serve my guru's mission? How can I serve Prabhupada's mission? What positive thing can I do? Right? The poor ladies. It's not that all marriage is money, guys, okay? They're going to kill me afterwards. I don't say so.
Mother-in-law, don't make all the guys think that marriage isn't. All these boys, they think that we're just flying.
The problem isn't women, the problem is love. So we can think of, okay, how can I serve my guru's mission? All right, and then the last one, the E is for what?
Effort.
And effort is in three categories. What are the three categories? Thinking, feeling, willing. Okay, so how can we feel? We already have this feeling. We have this lust and greediness for this television show. That's how we're feeling. We're hankering for this television show. So what can we feel instead?
Hankering for something else.
Hankering for something else. What else can we feel? Okay, I can have a desire to move forward. What else? How else can I feel? I can have a sense of determination. We can do all kinds of things with determination. Look, how many hours have you been up just due to determination? Amazing. Amazing what people can do just out of determination. How else can we feel? Praying for Krishna help us. That was under the L. Now we're on the E.
Enthusiastic.
But that's good. But what?
Enthusiastic.
I can feel enthusiastic. You know? I can also, remember we're talking about feeling how Krishna is everywhere and everything? I can try to get a sense. Because why does a person want to watch a television show? They want excitement, adventure, romance, whatever. Well, Krishna's all those things. Krishna says, I'm adventure. I'm strength. That's all Krishna. So one can feel that. Okay, what can one think? What are kind of things that we can think? Thinking, feeling, well. What? Yes, what are going to be the, what's going to be the result of this? Yeah? What will happen? Simply the witches will eat me. I'll have a big bite in my arm after I finish. You know? That you just think you can get out that little list you made yesterday of material happiness and read it over. What's the nature of material happiness? And then you won't be interested anymore. Okay, and what can we do? What about willing? What kind of behaviors can we do? We turn it off. Even better than that. Chuck it out the window. Chuck the antenna part of it out the window. Watch Krishna consciousness. What else? What else can we do?
Leave the house.
Leave the house. That's a very good idea. Go to the temple. Go to the jamming and harrow, you know. And don't put a tape in there on record while you go to the temple. Pick up your japa beads. Go cook something for Krishna. Sit down and make a plan to do something for Krishna. Think, How see? What plan could I make to spread Krishna consciousness? What could I do? Write it down. Talk to somebody. Read Bhagavad Gita, yes?
The other thing about more Christian yoga devices, I mean, say with the TV program, you mentioned when you watch inspiration with the TV program, so imagine you're a Christian yoga device, but you're being from the spiritual, so you're not coming from mind.
Well, first of all, when Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita that what does repression accomplish, he's talking about varnashram. He's saying that if your nature is to be kshatriya, you can't repress that nature and artificially act like a brahmana. It won't do any good. Your nature will come out anyway. And I was speaking 2 days ago about Krishna's personality, and I gave you a little, like, 3-minute overview of a 10-hour course on personality styles. And you can't repress your personality either. So we can temporarily act as if we're another kind of person in some certain situations. But the kind of personality or repression doesn't do any good of that kind of thing. Or it's like, you know, if you were to dye your hair blonde, it just looks funny, right? And the roots grow in. I mean, you understand what I'm saying? That kind of, trying to repress our basic nature is useless. It's useless. It's a waste of time. And you see, sometimes devotees do, Arjuna was trying to do this in the name of Krishna consciousness. He thought, the way I'm going to become Krishna conscious is I'm going to act as if I were, had a different material tendency. And Krishna said, no, no. The way to become Krishna conscious is you take your material tendency and use it for me. Don't try to repress it. You follow? So if someone's a real outgoing people person and they love to just travel the world and do festivals, you don't like stick them in a little office counting the money. Let them do festivals for Krishna. Don't try to repress their nature. And if someone's a reserved, task-oriented person, then you don't have them run festivals for 300,000 people. They'll be miserable. But that's what Krishna means about not repressing. And as far as desires, we're not meant to repress our desires, we're meant to take them back to what they were. All of our desires have their original good form. All of them. We've taken good things and we've twisted them. But the thing in and of itself is not bad. It's a bad form of it. Just to take a material example, is it good to be courageous? Is that good to be courageous? Is it good to be reckless? No. What's the difference? Motivation. Yeah, what's the difference?
Intelligence.
What else? What's the difference between being courageous and being reckless? The object. Mostly it's the object. So, if, you know, if my friends dare me to run in front of a car and I do that, or if I'm on the battlefield and my buddy is under enemy fire and I run in front of the enemy fire and I save him, am I basically doing the same thing? The only difference is the object. Isn't it? The only difference is the object. In both cases, I'm exposing myself to a good possibility of injury or death. The one's for a good cause and one's for a stupid cause. So everything, all of our desires are like that. None of our desires are intrinsically bad. We just have the wrong object. We have to change what's driving us. And Krishna explains in the 17th chapter that fate is in different modes according to the object. If I want to give pleasure to the senses of this body, that's illusion. If I want to give pleasure to Krishna's senses, that's spiritual. To give pleasure to the senses is not wrong. But whose senses? What's my object? Does that make sense? That's not repression. We're not interested in repression. Repression is useless. That's Maya body. That's impersonalism. I'm just going to stop. So let's say someone joins the Pandava Sena who has a very reckless nature and is always doing risky, foolish things. What advice are you going to give this person? Are you going to tell this person to become cautious and careful? You could. Do you think that would be very effective? What would be better advice for this person? Hmm? What? Somebody? Be courageous for Krishna. Take risks for Krishna. Take on some preaching project that involves some risk. If you find someone who's a risk taker, let them take risks for Krishna. Don't try to make them to be a super conservative person. Will that work? And if you get a person who's very, very cautious by nature, who likes to take, you know, a year to carefully think over everything and weigh all their options, and they make little charts and diagrams before they make a decision, are you going to ask them to take up some really risky service where they have to make split-second decisions for Krishna? Not if you're a good manager. You'll have them do something that requires a lot of caution and care and time. Does that make sense? Change the object. Don't try to stop desire. All right, let's summarize here before everybody leaves. All right, so what is Maya? Thinking something is different from what it is. Thinking the reflection is reality. Thinking the witches are a paradise. And we can recognize Maya in how we feel, how we think, and how we act. And we can conquer the burning of Maya with Ellen. Okay.